Ladies and gentlemen, jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. It is Thursday, January. Yeah, January. July.
Might as well be January, right?
May. Let's pick a month. It doesn't matter.
It's going to change in a few days.
July 27th, 2017. Welcome. Glad you could make it. It's great to be with everyone. Joe, a lot of news to get into. With respect to, everything, I guess.
Well, there's a whole host of news. We're still looking at Trump banning the transgender from the military and the media response to this.
Yep.
This is something we opened up with on the Hagman Daily Show today. You see the media focus, especially on this transgender issue, completely ignoring the Owen Brothers story and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, completely ignoring. You know, they're talking a little bit about the leaks, but just like the news networks. Like yesterday, we talked about this, or 2 days ago, how the news networks covered up the Wasserman Schultz IT staff and Owen Brothers arrest, even though there's double billing involved, possible espionage, blackmail.
No, officials, no possible, brother.
You know, only NBC ran a story online today, and Fox News has been reporting on this, which leaves a lot, for networks like CNN and MSNBC.
I just want to make a clarification, I suppose. Same thing. A distinction without a difference. Not even that. But when you said Fox News is reporting on it, Sean Hannity's reporting on it primarily.
Okay. Yeah.
Fox News, I think, is acquiescing to that. There's a big difference there. I addressed the Owen Brothers, the entire show, my show this morning at 9 o'clock. I addressed the Owen Brothers, and by the way, I didn't touch any buttons and it came out fabulous, and I want to thank Eric the Tech for that. But yeah, three shows, by the way, 9 to 10 Eastern, Doug, my show, and then, 2 to 3, John and Joe, or Joe and John, or JJ and
yeah, it's been going good. I know your show's been going good. Our show's been going good.
Yeah.
It's a change of pace in today. The daily schedule. And people might not understand some of the things that go on behind the scenes, but when getting ready to do when you do another hour of content a day, it's not so much even the preparation if anything has changed as far as at least what I do on a daily basis to prepare information wise for that show or this show, but just the process and getting a routine down, getting into a rhythm. It's a little bit of adjustment, but not complaining. Just wanted to put that out there. But the shows have been going real well. Still hope people will continue to provide feedback. That's been a little scarce, but it's the first week of the shows, and we expected it to be just a little. It'll take a while to catch on for people to find it.
Right.
But no, they're going good. The Doug Hagman show, 9 to 10. The Hagman Daily show, 2 to 3. And folks, if you do listen, send us some feedback on what you think of the shows.
Yeah, I'm particularly interested in today's show and mine, the show I did today. I'm particularly interested in any feedback you might have, because Debbie Wasserman Schultz, according to the Gateway Pundit,
is a train wreck.
Barely able to function since the Imran Awan arrest. And
is that because she's unhappy, they were lovers or
no?
So there's speculation of that. That's why I brought that up.
No.
What would put her in a state of mind where she couldn't function and become a wreck because this guy was finally arrested?
Is it because of what he knows? Yes. It's because of what he knows, what she knows that he knows, and what she knows is at stake. The Imran Awan arrest is the first of many dominoes to fall, as I explained this morning. And I'm going to tell you something right now. It's only the beginning. You saw her with the chief of the Capitol Police, Verdosa, back in May 18th or May 24th, when she threatened him.
There will be consequences.
There will be consequences. Let me tell you, she wasn't kidding. She wanted that laptop back. It's information that's on the hard drives. It's on the laptop. Now, you said right before the opening of the show, the Imran Awan's attorney. I about vomited when I heard the statement. You know, when we talk about it, we talked about it, but the fact that that he wants his client to get his life back. Well,
and this is crazy. I have just the first sentence of the statement here. Imran Awan's attorney released a statement, blames Islamophobia and ultra-right-wing media, also Pizzagate, for the treatment of his client Awan.
Yeah.
Go figure.
Well, Islamophobia was started by by Meeks, Gregory Meeks, the House of Representatives. That meme.
You know, when you commit espionage and treason and you're blackmailing congressional officials, and who cares what nationality you're from? It's treason. You should be hung on the Capitol lawn, whether you're white, black, Muslim, or Russian. It doesn't matter. And for them to turn around and use this victim card, it just speaks to the culture the media and the political pundits have created through this, you know, political correct movement. Everybody's a victim, even when they're the most ruthless criminal. And I don't think that his statement's going to really... the networks aren't even covering anyway, so who even knows about this if they're not doing the research for themselves and looking online and checking out different media sources. If you're just an average American watching the news every day, you're not even knowing this is going on.
That's right.
And if the news media is not even going to report on the story, they're definitely not going to report on the attorney's statement about why he believes his client was arrested.
This is just the beginning. I promise you, this is just the beginning. And you know something, Joe? Here's the other issue. This is not just about Imran Awan. This is about his, really three brothers, not two, but three. So there's four Awan brothers, a good friend of the Awans, two wives of Imran Awan's wife and, Abid Awan's wife. So there's six right there. And, Imran's good friend. Now, Imran's wife is in Pakistan, just to let you know.
She did make her plane. He was on.
No. She left in January.
Oh, okay.
Earlier this year.
I must have misread the article.
She's already in Pakistan with her two kids. And by the way, when Imran Awan goes to Pakistan, he is treated as a foreign dignitary would be treated.
Yeah, he has ISI protection.
And
with Bin Laden had.
There is, exactly, and there is a direct connection between the Imran Awan and the ISI. And of course the Imran Awan had borrowed money from Dr. Ali Al-Attar, who is associated with Hezbollah. And again, I get into this, I'm not going to repeat this, but I talked about this on the show today. And $100,000 there. And what they, but here's the thing, what they got Imran for was getting a mortgage on a house or an equity loan on a house that he didn't own, essentially. It's the kind of the short, wasn't his primary residence, which is really kind of like getting a Capone on a tax violation. Not quite what really is going on here. So that's just to grab him and keep him here while the investigation gets hot. But this is the first strike back against the deep state by the Trump administration. I truly believe this. I believe it. Because when you start pulling at this,
Trump didn't get this ball rolling, did he? This was the Capitol Police. This was a...
I really think that it is the Department of Justice, and specifically the Trump's people, said, okay, here's what we need to do. We have to play our cards a little bit differently here because of the swamp. We got landmines everywhere, or in this case, alligators everywhere in the swamp. So here's how we're gonna approach this. I believe that what we're seeing is a very measured approach and a very methodical approach, especially given the fact that Debbie Wasserman Schultz apparently needs more Xanax than is available on planet Earth. And then that's very important, because I think that they're going to sweat her out by doing what they're doing. They could have done a couple of things differently, but by doing it this way, I think they're sweating her out. And you watch,
her
on suicide watch.
Somebody's going to end up dead if there really is that much at stake.
Oh, there's going to be more than one end up dead, I believe. I guarantee it.
We should put odds on that. Who will be? The death pool.
Yeah. like at my doctor's office, right? Yeah, all right.
Switching gears here real quick, I want to make sure we touch on this story. I mentioned this to you earlier today. In California, how many people remember G. Gordon Liddy from the Watergate incident?
Yeah,
the infamous G. Gordon Liddy.
Well, I was surprised to hear this.
His son, Raymond Joseph Liddy, a 53-year-old, who is the Deputy State Attorney General for California, was arrested today for child pornography charges, according to media reports. FBI agents arrested the 53-year-old Raymond Liddy Tuesday at his home in Coronado, for possession of child pornography, according to the San Diego Union-Tribune. He pleaded not guilty to charges in San Diego federal court and was released to home detention with GPS monitoring on a $100,000 bond. California Attorney General Xavier Becerra office said in a statement Wednesday that it was aware of the charges against Liddy and that he has been placed on administrative leave. San Diego Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force began investigating the case after receiving reports from internet service providers that a user had uploaded 11 images that appeared to be child pornography. Investigators traced the uploads to Liddy's home in Coronado, and he was taken into custody. He admitted to the FBI that he downloaded sexual images using online services to share sexual fantasies, but he said most of the images were of adults. Either way, he's in jail and he is facing charges of child pornography. The son, again, of G. Gordon Liddy, who was himself convicted of burglary and conspiracy in the Watergate scandal.
Yeah, and Liddy had offered his life for Nixon. You talk about people tend to put G. Gordon Liddy up on a pedestal. He had his own radio show. As a matter of fact, I spoke to him. I had sent him a fax back in, my goodness, it was in the 90s or something. And it was just a very short telephone conversation, not on air, as off air. But actually, I'll tell you the reason why I spoke to him is because I was listening to his program when the videotape was running on the surveillance, and it actually got entered into, bizarrely, in a very bizarre fashion, got entered onto the record of the court case that I was testifying at. So I said, hey, you know, I took you to court and I explained the situation, and it was just kind of a humorous little situation. But long story short, I spoke to him, but he said he offered his, life. He said he'd stand on some street corner basically and offer to be shot on behalf of Nixon if it came to that.
How loyal of him.
Yeah. Yeah. And his book, Will, I think it survived a couple of moves. His book, Will, was a fascinating read. I don't know how many people read that. That's going back a number of years. But, wow.
Haven't been able to verify this yet, but it's possible an FBI lawyer is being investigated for leaking classified information. And there's some interesting things going on at the White House. The Scaramucci said on CNN today that he'd be willing to fire everybody in the White House communication staff and otherwise to get to the bottom of the leaks. Now, there's been some speculation that him and Rince Priebus have been going at it pretty good. Well, Scaramucci today said on CNN, if Rince wants to explain he's not a leaker, let him do that. The White House continues to say that there's not really bad blood, but if you look at the history of the Scaramucci and his hire, Rince Priebus was one of the people who fought his hire from the get-go. But this leaking problem is not going away. And what's interesting is the president and Sean Hannity and the Scaramucci were eating dinner yesterday, and Scaramucci says within 7 minutes that information was leaked to the press. He talked to the person who received the information. He wouldn't give up a source. And it looks like the White House is getting really sick of this. And also Jeff Sessions is wanting to get involved in finding out who these leakers are so he can prosecute them. Maybe Trump lit a fire under him with some of those tweets he sent out earlier this week. Maybe not. Maybe this was always part of the plan. But we will see. These leaks are very damaging to the administration, and that leaves there no trust really within those inner circles.
No.
Which you're not productive when you have those issues like that. You can't be productive if you're constantly, you know, what you plan to do, what you're setting up to do is being leaked before you're able to do it effectively. That's going to ruin any administration and make it as unproductive as possible. So this is one, I mean, this has been one of the biggest stories of the Trump administration, the devastating amount of leaks.
125 and 126 days.
Yeah, and they, I mean, it's about time these people were cracked down on, or at least taken away their access to that kind of information, probably by firing, or at the very least, I'd say, and they're lucky if they don't get prosecuted at the worst, so.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you really can't get prosecuted for leaks, general leaks. For example, someone had released, I think it was Scaramucci's.
It has to be classified information. Right?
Or it has to be privileged. It has to meet certain guidelines, but yes. It doesn't necessarily have to be classified, but it's going to meet certain guidelines in order to qualify for criminal penalties. So, I'll just leave it at that. But we don't have to get too far down into those weeds. But I want to go back to Debbie Wasserman Schultz again, okay, because just very quickly, that's one area, and I'm going to continue with this tomorrow on my show tomorrow. And folks, 9 to 10, my show, John and Joe at 2 to 3, live both. Urge everyone to listen and provide feedback. Eric did a great job on how to listen. Just go to HagmanReport.com, click on the link, how to listen, and all three shows pop up. Eric, let me ask you this. Somebody had said the shows are not on iTunes. My show isn't in particular.
I've downloaded all four of ours from iTunes.
Mine is? Really?
What you do, folks, if you go to the...
Okay.
If you go to the Doug Hagman show homepage on BTR, there's little icons on the right-hand side. You got an RSS feed icon, an iTunes icon, and a few others. If you click that iTunes icon, it will take you to your iTunes application and automatically start downloading the podcast. That's one way to do it. And yeah, Eric, Stitcher, you can go to Stitcher, basically any podcast outlet. Eric says Stitcher is awesome. I haven't personally used it, but.
Yeah, Sean Hannity is on Stitcher, and yeah, feel free to mic up, man.
I don't know how many people saw this story. We talked about it a little bit yesterday on our show, or 2 days ago. The Islamic Center of Davis has become under fire after a two-hour sermon calls for the annihilation of all Jews by Imam Amar Shahin. And it's a very underreported story, obviously not even being reported in the media, hardly anywhere. I've heard a few people mention it. Michael Savage is one of those people. And what he's saying is right. You know, these when we see this news cycle, and what dominates the news cycle, from, you know, the hateful transgender ban, which, I mean, it's the best thing Trump could have done for the military, in my opinion. And I'm sorry if that offends anybody, but that's just what I think. You know, they're so focused on every decision to go after every decision Trump makes and attack him and his position, no matter what that is, that I believe that they're doing that to fill time so they don't have to cover up these other stories, like the Iwan brother and Debbie Wasserman Schultz story, like the Islamic Center of Davis story, where these people are calling, you know, for the annihilation of all Jews, yet nobody is speaking out against their calls for violence. Instead, you know, they turn around and say, oh, you don't like it, you're Islamophobic, and it's crazy what's going on. But, you know, what do we expect from the media? They're not there to inform or educate or make things better for anybody. They're not even there to convey information that's relevant or even based in reality. They have really turned into the Ministry of Propaganda to the 10th power. But at the same time, the more that they continue to push in that direction, the less people are paying attention to them and listening to them, other than, you know, the people who already have their minds made up about how they think, or for entertainment purposes, you know, to laugh or to gauge or monitor. But these people, I mean, it's just getting crazy. When the Trump banning transgenders from the military is the number one story, with all these other things going on, all these other scandals, the Clinton Foundation and criminal network unraveling, the Iwan brothers, the Washington Schultz, the congressman blackmail, all these things are going on, with the DNC. Just about, you know, when we talk about, how the media reports things and how they label things conspiracy theories, it's funny how so much of what they called conspiracy theories, from the Clinton email and Podesta email dump have actually been proven to be true, yet you'll never hear that being covered in the mainstream media. And then, you know, to be silent when these Muslims call for, you know, the annihilation of all Jews or gays or whatever, you know, Christians. In the UK, there's three Muslim men running around beating up white Christians until they were stopped and beat up themselves, from what I understand.
And that's the UK saying,
"Oh no, we're not gonna charge this as a hate crime." In Paris and in the UK, there's, you know, four or five acid attacks a week where people are running around throwing acid in other people's faces. There was just a huge rash of those just last week and through the weekend over there in Europe. But, you know, you don't hear about any of this stuff. You only hear, oh, you have to be tolerant. You have to, it's a religion of peace and blah, 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 blah. It's getting to a point where I believe the news media is doing us a lot of favors, us being in the alternative media.
Of course.
By driving people away. So in that regard, I wouldn't want them to stop doing what they're doing. But at the same time, they are so far from the reality of what the American people care about that I believe their approval rating is lower than Congress. And they're going to continue to spin out of control downward. Not that they'll ever go off the air, not that they'll ever go bankrupt. With the funding they have, you know, I'm sure they're paid to do a lot of the content that they do, even by the government. But the less and less people are watching them, the better. And that means things that could be a lot better for the alternative media, that we might see that transition here in the near future. It just seems like a lot of people are sick and tired of the witch hunts. You know, we saw all these Obama scandals ignored, from Fast and Furious to the IRS scandal to Benghazi. They protected him during these times. Now we have a president who's pretty much scandal-free, except for the scandals created in the media. And these people and these companies, that's all they can focus on, is the speculative scandals in the media that the media is creating. And it doesn't matter what Trump does, they're going to continue to go after him constantly. But I believe that the more they do that, the more the people see these media and political figures for who they really are. And sooner than later, if they haven't already gravitated to the alternative media, or at least to the internet to do some searches to find out more information, I believe the media is going to continue to push those people away from their own outlets, unless their minds are already made up.
It's a good analysis. I think that you captured that pretty well. You mentioned the transgender ban. I'm using air quotes. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff
said not yet.
Well, said I'm not going to do anything until the Donald Trump clarifies his tweets. Well, of course, I'm certain he's going to do that. But to think that we've got a wussified or
I was so frustrated last night.
Man, can you believe that kind of crap?
So,
I'd fire him too, just on principle. Yep. I would fire that son of that person. I'd fire him.
No, but really, I had some friends come up from Florida for some family stuff they had to take care of, and they came over last night. And we got into they're involved in, you know, paying attention to politics, and we were talking about the snowflakes, and he was going on and on about how crazy these people are. And then we started talking about the media and CNN, and we were saying, okay, before we turn on CNN, it was 1 o'clock in the morning, and I said, I'll turn on CNN. Are they going to be talking about Russia? What are they going to be talking about? So we turn on CNN, and it's a rebroadcast of Anderson Cooper. And the same he/she that was on the Drudge Report yesterday saying, you know, tell me to my face I'm not worthy to be in the military, was on Anderson Cooper. The guy had a Adam's apple, like juice box.
Yeah.
He had a chin like a linebacker, and he had this big wig on, and he had a deep voice, but he was trying to conceal it by talking like a woman. And this was the lead story on CNN. Everything else that's going on, this is the lead story, how Trump is just this big hater. And, you know, we look at some of the numbers today. They're saying that it's 15 times more expensive for healthcare costs to take care of transgenders in the military. And we're going to have Matt Bracken on after this break, and he's going to get into a little bit of the psychology that goes behind serving with a group of people in combat. He's a former Navy SEAL, and we're going to talk about this. But one thing the media left out is that this person didn't serve in the Navy SEALs on SEAL Team 6 as a transgender woman. He was a man the whole time during his service. He received a Purple Heart.
Right.
And, you know, I thank him for his service to this country. But when you turn around and become a woman after your service and get paraded on the news...
Yes. Yeah.
As some kind of victim or martyr, like you were this great soldier and you were always a woman inside, then they bring up the Caitlyn Jenner stuff, and it's just so ridiculous. These people are really trying to destroy the moral fabric of this country, and they've done so for, you know, at least 20% of the population already. but they're not ready to quit. They're just doubling down.
I want to know how many transgenders there are in the world, and then how many there are in the United States, I should say, and then how many there are in the military. I want a number.
That's why I believe it. I'm going to go to Hagman Report, our website right now. I believe the show image for tonight is from MASH, Corporal Klinger from MASH. Yeah, it is. And if you guys remember MASH, and I used to watch it when I was young. I loved that show. Klinger used to dress up as a woman just for the purpose of trying to get discharged from the war. And it was a big joke. You know, he was never, they never portrayed him as homosexual or he would just dress up as a woman to try to appear to be crazy.
Right.
To get a discharge, a mental discharge from the military. So what has happened in the 35, 40 years from that show till today where you see the complete change from the establishment? I mean, all the Nancy Pelosi's outrage that Trump wants to ban transgender from the military, and the media just continues to report on these people who are, you know, who are outraged, ex-soldiers who have turned, you know, into women or whatever. But they don't actually, you know, show the reports of the real people who, there's even reports out there now of people who were a soldier turned into a woman and then are now talking about how much that destroyed their life. And, I mean, there's so much that goes into this that we're right up against the break. We don't have time to get into it. But the image for today's show is Corporal Klinger. And it just shows you how far the mentality of this country has come. Even in the psychology, the DSM-5, they list it as some type of gender dysmorphia. It's listed as a mental disorder. You can't even get in the military if you have ADHD. But they're going to let the people with these mental disorders in? It's crazy. We're going to get Matt Bracken's opinion on this on the other side. Folks, you're listening to this edition of the Hagman Report. Don't go anywhere. Former Navy SEAL Matt Bracken will be our guest from 7:30 to 9, and then we will be joined by Tim Alberino from 9 to 10. So it's going to be a great show. We'll be right back.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced. Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Parada's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
Uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
folks, to this edition of the Hagmann and the Hagmann Report. We have a guest for you, returning guest Matt Bracken. You know him, Matt Bracken, a fantastic writer. Folks, check this out. Check this out. His brand new book. Brand new book. And I've got it. We've got it. The Red Cliffs of Zerhun. What a tremendous book. This, what a timely book, too. Did you get a, did you see this? The Red Cliffs of Zerhun. I want to read the back. I'm going to read the back of the book because that really got me. Matt Bracken is probably one of the best writers I know. Some, in the back, some men will travel 1,000 miles to kidnap our children for sex slavery. Some men will go much farther and risk everything to bring them all home. Now, if that doesn't get you, I mean, if that doesn't say everything, this is a novel about slavery and the high price of freedom. Freedom is not free. And it's about damn time that the Christian, conservative, limp-wristed, spineless, gutless wonders in America realize that. Never and it's about time that we stand up and do something about it, because Matt Bracken is going to kick your butt from here to, you know, where.
It's never been free. Freedom has never been free. That's, I mean, right. Just look at the battles that are going on now. You know, freedom is under attack. The Constitution's under attack. And not only that, freedom all across the world, even in places where freedom was once, you know, a way of life. Yes. You know, we see the destruction and how things can change in just a moment's notice.
Well, let's bring our guest on. Matt Bracken, thanks for joining us, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
No, I'm glad you came back, man. You know, I'll tell you, some people say, come back, are you kidding me? No, I'm joking around, but my friend, you outdid yourself. The Red Cliffs of Zerhun. I thank you so much for this book. I've been keeping it away from Joe. I've been hogging this book. It's a fantastic read. And as you point out, the entire novel is an allegory, and it's about really kind of the decisions we have to make, I believe. Let's talk about it. If you don't mind, let's start talking about this book, and then we're going to get into some other areas as well. But let's talk about your book and how this was birthed.
Well, it's sort of an historical echo. Most of the main characters' names in the book, it's not really a plot spoiler, but they're from history. All of these things and wilder things that are described in the book actually happened in the 1600s and 1700s. And, you know, we just tend to forget about it. You know, the freedom isn't free, but the problem is when a society is very affluent for a couple of generations, the normalcy bias kicks in and almost everybody comes to believe that affluence and what they perceive of as freedom are just a birthright or just a natural state of man. You know, like running water, air is free, water runs out of the tap. They don't think at all, you know, somebody had to build this water system, and if it ever collapsed, we'd be really in a bad way. Nobody thinks of that. They just think that affluence and freedom are a natural state of being. But there was a time 200 years ago to 500 years ago when it was so dangerous to travel from England to the Mediterranean, about a quarter of ships were captured and people taken away to slavery. And in fact, major land raids were undertaken, thousands at a time in Italy and in Spain, and even going as far afield as Iceland, if you can imagine Iceland. How would Moors from North Africa know to go to Iceland to kidnap 400 Christians in one fell swoop because they had traitor captains? There are former Christians, traitors, who are willing to convert to Islam for the benefits, the evil benefits that that religion provides. Namely, if you catch Christian slaves, you can use them as sex slaves, as labor slaves, or kill them, whatever, it's up to you. So I don't think that people really have been taught this at all. The narrative for at least the last generation has been that slavery must be something that was invented by evil white Europeans. And in fact, it was the white Europeans who abolished slavery. You know, slavery has always been around as far as the Babylonians, as far back as we can go. slavery has existed. When Columbus got to the New World, all of the Indians had slaves. But it was Christians like William Wilberforce, a Brit, who abolished slavery. That seems to have been just erased from our history, because currently cultural Marxist history is that evil colonial Europeans have done everything terrible and horrible in the entire world. But in fact, along with everybody else, Europeans inherited slavery, but it was Christians, specifically English Christians, who led the fight to abolish it. And it was Christians in America who then abolished it here as well. It wasn't even abolished in the Middle East until the colonization happened. For example, there were still slave markets in Morocco in the 20th century until the French got there and stamped it out. They had slave markets in Saudi Arabia until the late 1960s. And many would say slavery still exists in Saudi Arabia. It's just sub rosa. They take the laborer, poor nurse or maid comes from the Philippines. They take her passport away and they make her a debt and bondage slavery where she's essentially locked in a house. If she ever gets back to the Philippines, it's strictly because she was lucky and fortunate and her owners, her indentured servitude owners let her out of the contract and let her get out of the country. So yeah, slavery has always been a part of Islam, and people don't think about this, but when Europe is weak, these facets of Islam will always reemerge. And right now, Europe is extremely weak. In fact, it's probably more threatened now than it's ever been. Because when you think about it, the major times in history when Islam threatened to just overrun all of Europe, at the Battle of Tours in the early Middle Ages, the Battle of Lepanto, which was a naval battle with an invasion force behind it in the Mediterranean, and then at the gates of Vienna in the 1600s, if those battles had gone the other way, all of Europe would have been Islamified by the sword. And now they've actually got beachheads in every city. So much worse than, say, when an army is approaching Vienna. Now every capital in Europe, every city in Europe, has a Muslim jihad beachhead that I liken to the creature in the movie Alien that's burrowed inside of the spaceman when he goes down on the planet. And at the crisis moment, that alien is going to erupt right out of that guy's chest. That's the Islamic jihad beachhead in every European city, and to a lesser extent in the United States as well.
You mentioned something that's really important that's always going to be relevant, and that is the way history has been reshaped, remolded, and changed. And a good example of this that we haven't talked about on this show yet is the movie Dunkirk. I've been seeing a lot of reading reviews and hearing different people talk about it, where they left out France's role in this. There was an article about that Monday in Dunkirk, and then they didn't label, they wouldn't say Nazi in the movie. They didn't label the enemies, and that's just one little example of that. But even to what you're talking about with slavery, There's just huge misconceptions, and this is because the media is trying to change history. And just a few off the top of my head. One is that the Democrats was the party to free the slaves, even though not one Democrat voted to free the slaves, and they were the party of the KKK, not the Republicans. But if you ask, 10 people today, you're going to get, 9 people that say it was the Republicans who, not to make this a political party issue, right, but just to speak to the mentality.
Dinesh D'Souza has an excellent movie that came out about a year ago about that exact subject.
Exactly. We talked
about Alinsky and the Democrats.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terrific movie.
Yeah. We had him on, and help me out with the
name. I'm drawing a blank there. I don't remember that.
Oh, the name of the documentary.
I can't. I'm drawing a blank as
the
well.
Hillary's America. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. The shaping of history is very important, and even to go to the movie Dunkirk, I haven't seen the movie and I don't intend to, because some of my friends went and considered walking out. That was so lame. I mean, this is a movie where the essence of the situation is that there are 300,000 Brits on the beach, that might have been strafed and bombed into oblivion, and none of the scenes show more than a couple hundred soldiers, which is almost, you could, even if you had to use CG, there's, you need some huge up and down the beach scenes, and there are none. There are no pictures of swastikas or, you know, German. Nobody even knows who's attacking these people. You know?
Right. So, they don't identify them by name. They just say the enemy, right. The enemy.
Right. And you know, this is an important factor because right now, and this is an Alex Jones tagline, but, you know, it's an information war. It's a war for our minds, for sure. And I'll give you an example, something else I want to talk about tonight, which is the entire civil war right now. It's fought at being fought at a covert level, but we're seeing where it emerges in the media as the part of the shaped narrative, which is the war between the deep state and Trump. You know, the whole situation with Fusion GPS, the Russian dossier, this was all about creating a narrative. The Trump people before the election really were naive and they were amateurs, and they were up against some real sharp characters. This Fusion GPS, this is, you know, ex-intelligence operatives that study human nature. They do psychological analysis of everybody they're up against. They do financial analysis. They probe for blackmail points, for weaknesses. So the entire point of the meeting with Donald Jr. and Manafort and the other son-in-law, the whole point of the meeting was just to have the meeting. They could have showed a slideshow of somebody's vacation. It doesn't matter. Once the meeting happened, Natalia V, the Russian spy, she gets her bonus immediately. That was a victory, high fives. You got the meeting. These dumb suckers don't even know that they've just been had. They just handed us ammunition to be used down the road. It doesn't matter what was said or wasn't said in the meeting. The fact of the meeting is all that mattered. And I'll take it forward, because apparently the dossier was originally commissioned as opposition research by Republicans, Jeb Bush, McCain, etc., against Trump. And when Trump actually won, it was converted into an anti-Trump weapon. And the first time that it became publicly known or widely known, it was very little reported in, like, the David Corn of The Nation, a few people that were in 2016, a little bit about it. But when it really exploded on the scene was after the January 6th meeting. The first time that Trump met Comey in private was in January 6th, when he was president-elect, and Comey wanted to talk about the dirty dossier, the Golden Shower dossier. Why? It was bogus. I'm sure Comey knew it was bogus. Was he trying to intimidate Trump? Was he trying to blackmail Trump with false statements? Not at all. All he was doing was getting a meeting with the president-elect where this dossier would be discussed. Then the fact of the meeting, just like more currently, the fact of the meeting about Trump Jr. and the Natalia V, the fact of the meeting then becomes the weapon. So Comey leaves the meeting. It's leaked to the New York Times, I'm sure, via the same Columbia professor. So in the New York Times, headlines, president has meeting with FBI director to discuss scandalous Russian dossier. That's all that mattered. It could have been blank pages. It could have been, you know, cut and paste from online websites. It doesn't matter. The fact of the meeting is all that mattered. Then you go to February 14th. Trump is still just an amateur at this. He's a pro-businessman. He's an amateur at this kind of political chicanery. February 14th, Trump has a meeting with Comey. He asks Comey to stay after a cabinet meeting or a meeting of principals. Why wouldn't he think it was natural? The first time he met Comey in private was at Comey's request. Trump's not a professional politician. He doesn't know what's protocol, what's taboo. So he has a meeting with Comey where the name Flynn comes up. And apparently, you know, I hope that nothing bad happens to Flynn. He's a good guy. It doesn't matter what exactly was said in the meeting. The fact that the meeting occurred and Comey then, you know, made memoranda for the record, that's the ammunition. That's the bullet. Because it doesn't matter what's said, it's when that card can be played. It's like a poker game. Now I've got an ace up my sleeve. When Trump goes to fire Comey, that's when that card is played. It's all about shaping the narrative for public consumption. It's a big poker game, and even the people in the poker game are maybe seeing, you know, two or three up cards and the rest of the deck is face down. I can guarantee you, as laypersons and even interested and knowledgeable laypersons, we're not even seeing the cards that they see. We're maybe seeing one card per hand. And the whole narrative is being spun out of that. He's got a joker. He's got an ace. That's just what we're meant to see. But at its essence, this is all about shaping the narrative. And that's why we're in the middle of a covert civil war right now. And the battlefield is information. The battlefield is the cable news, talk radio, and shaping public opinion. And this is why I think that Trump is making a lot of terrible decisions, but I think bringing in Scaramucci is essentially just bringing in somebody that's going to verbally battle much faster inside of the OODA loop, the Observe, Orient, Decide, Act. Somebody who can, other than Trump with Twitter, who can go straight to CNN, straight to MSNBC, and fire back immediately in the same news cycle. How effective that will be, it remains to be seen. But we are seeing a non-shooting civil war, and I'm convinced it's because the principals involved in this coup, which I would say are Mueller and Comey are the leaders of it. Rosenstein and McCabe certainly are at high level also of this trap. Some of these people are risking prison time for real and seriously if they don't take Trump out. So they're going for broke with their own coup, which is mainly a false narrative coup, false narrative of a Russian meeting with Trump Jr. that meant nothing, but it's a media ammunition point. The meetings between Comey and Trump, they had no meaning other than how they can be spun and used as a weapon in the media. But these guys like Comey, if there's a prosecutor as zealous as Mueller but going the other way, folks like Comey are facing spending the rest of their lives in prison because they've been essentially been taking huge bribes, you know, million-dollar bribes, for the last 20 years, I would say, for sure, Lynch and Comey. Absolutely. They have a revolving door, a rotating door, between working at Hillary's law firm for $1 million a year, whether you ever in court, kind of basically a no-show payola job. Comey working for Lockheed when they have business before Hillary, huge jet contracts. Comey working at HSBC Bank when they're being charged with massive corruption, laundering drug cartel money. Lynch is the attorney general. They work together to make sure that nothing happens to HSBC. And Comey gets, you know, paid $5 or $6 million a year for essentially a no-show job, put his stamp, sign some papers. So this is the kind of mega corruption that we're involved with. They rotate between these corporate payola gigs and then state's attorney and district attorney, federal attorney jobs. And then ultimately you get Comey into the FBI. This is the fox being given the job of sheriff in the hen house. And the media spins these guys like Mueller and Comey as straight arrows, mm-hmm. above reproach. They're the most corrupt and devious swamp dwellers imaginable. Mueller worked for both of them since the 90s. So did Rosenstein. I guarantee you, these cats, McCabe, Rosenstein, Mueller, Comey, there's sort of a corruption corollary to mutual assured destruction. These guys all know where, they've all helped each other bury bodies, put it that way. You say a friend will help you bury the body. Well, these guys have all helped each other bury the scandals. They all know that they can take each other out. If one of them goes down in flames, he's got enough information to make sure that the other three go down in flames with him. This guarantees cooperation. So when Rosenstein gets the private meeting that says, you're going to name Mueller to be the special counsel, Rosenstein's got no choice. Because these guys have got each other blackmailed, mutually blackmailed, nine ways from Sunday, going back 25 years. And there's no way he can't name Mueller to be special counsel. Same thing with McCabe. McCabe's wife takes between $700,000 and $800,000 to run for a state office where nobody ever spent more than $100,000. She gets the money from the bag man, McAuliffe, governor of Virginia, and never discloses it. That's the acting FBI director, McCabe. He's helping Comey, while Comey is at FBI and after, he's helping to spread the Golden Shower dirty dossier. These guys are filthy up to their necks, and they can all take each other down. And that's why they're going all out to take out Trump, because if Trump gets his own Mueller to look into their past sins, unlike Trump, Trump can be run out of office. He can be impeached. Remember, impeachment's not a criminal proceeding. Impeachment is political. They can impeach the president any time they want. There's no crime involved. But what Comey is involved in is criminal. Comey and Lynch are involved in criminal activities that could result in them being buried under the federal penitentiary. They cannot allow this to happen, and that is why they are holding nothing back to take out Trump, using lies and a false narrative, but so far it seems to be working, and Trump's not being very effective at countering it.
Man, what you just said, all I can say is what he said. Fantastic. Let me ask you a question, if I may, with respect to the players here. You've got, just a couple of days ago, you had former CIA director John Brennan and DNI Clapper.
The Muslim.
Yeah, the Muslim. Basically saying that...
Communist Muslim.
Thank you, yes. Basically saying that they're calling for a coup if President Donald Trump fires Mueller, which I think he should, but that said, are Mueller and... My question to you is the position Mueller and Brennan may be playing at the moment, might be playing at the moment, if any.
If Mueller gets fired, see, this is like goading Trump into firing Comey in the first place. This is dropping the trap. At this level, these people do such in-depth psychological analysis. They know what buttons to push. For one guy, it's greed. For one guy, it's lust. For one guy, it's attack his family. He'll just go off. You know, the red comes down. He's no longer rational. So at this level, these intelligence operatives, they hire psychologists. They hire little teams like opposition research psychologists. So they know what words to use to trigger the desired reaction. And for when Comey was fired by Trump, this was a setting of a trap. This directly led to Rosenstein naming Mueller. Rosenstein had no choice. They've all got mutual blackmail on each other. Rosenstein had to name Mueller, the one man who's Comey's best friend. It's so the conflict of interest is so enormous. It's just staggering. Where Brennan comes into it, you know, Brennan has been essentially, as far as I'm concerned, a constitutional traitor for decades. This is the one of the greatest evil legacies of Obama, and even going back to the first Clinton administrations, they brought in these Alinskyites. They have allowed them to embed themselves, and they get a status of being just a straight shooter federal employee. When these guys are Alinsky communists from go, you know, for example, Brennan, how could he have ever risen through the ranks of the CIA when he voted communist in college? Not when he was 14. It's in college. In college, I was in ROTC. I was, you know, ready to become a naval officer. I knew what communism was about. This was the Cold War. When he voted communist for Gus Hall, American Communist Party, the Soviets were killing people. You know, they were jabbing people with poison umbrellas. They were setting assassins to kill the Pope. You know, they had people in psychiatric institutions where they inject them with things that cause immense pain and destroy the brain. So, I mean, they were extremely evil in the 1980s when Clapper voted, or Brennan voted for Gus Hall. Then he goes to Saudi Arabia. There are very credible allegations from eyewitnesses seeing him praying. You know, he certainly speaks as an Islamophile. We all know about taqiyya, holy deception. So somebody who's going to rise through the high ranks as a traitor is not going to say, oh, by the way, I actually converted to Islam 15 years ago when I was a station chief in Saudi Arabia. So when you have traitors, anti-American, anti-constitutional, globalist, communist, Islamist traitors who worm their way into the highest echelons, you know, they are not going to go quietly. Clapper is somewhat more of an enigma. I think that Clapper will tend to go which way the wind is blowing. Clapper is one of these guys that will jump on board, you know, whichever attack seems to be the one that's going to take the fort at the end. He'll make sure he's in that group. But Brennan and Comey and Lynch, I think that they face, you know, some serious charges. You know, if Trump was able to drain the swamp and get, you know, Giuliani and folks like that on them, they could all go to prison.
Folks, we're talking with former U.S. Navy SEAL Matt Bracken, enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. He's got a new book, The Red Cliffs of Zurhon. I hope I said that right. And
Zurhon.
A novel about slavery and the high price of freedom. He's going to be with us through the next hour. We're going to continue to talk about what we're talking about right now, and we're going to go into a number of different directions with Matt Bracken when we come back. Folks, you're listening to this edition of the Hagmann Report. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this network break.
Greenovative. Go to HagmannReport.com, click on the link to Greenovative. But what Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water. But a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's small, smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.